management and productivity of conventional and alternative cropping systems in central Iowa. Stefan, I'm assuming?
That's right.
Okay, if you would, please, sir.
Thank you.
Well, good afternoon, and thank you for being here. I'm here to talk about some of the cropping systems experiments that we've been conducting at Iowa State. And so as to not further any more suspense, I will be referring to corn grain production when I am speaking about and management and productivity as we are in central Iowa. Some things that I wanted to convey to you all in the audience today, just to briefly go over these before I get started, are that the alternative systems that we studied at this point in time are just about equivalent to the conventional systems. And this is with respect to soil nitrogen throughout the growth and the year of the corn, the final plant populations of the corn during that growing season, and finally the projected corn grain yield. Now, I have to refer to projected yields because as of right now, that corn is still in the field due to some late planting conditions that we experienced in the spring, so I wasn't able to provide total or definite corn grain yields for us today, but I do have some projections that will allow us to make some comparisons. I'd like to first remark that a lot of this work was born out of conversations with farmers throughout the state of Iowa, both organic and conventional farmers, who were interested in diversifying their rotations beyond the standard corn and soybean rotation that is quite dominant where I come from in central Iowa. Some of these farmers, and us researchers as well, were very curious about trials of canola and other spring crops or winter crops that are harvested earlier in the season, such as July. We were interested in trials of growing canola and wheat with red clover underseeded beneath the canopy. On the left is a full stand of canola flowering in June. And on the right there is the red clover growing beneath the canopy, much as one might see with red clover growing beneath a canopy of wheat. We also tried it with red clover, or with canola, rather. And finally, some of the results that the farmers were seeing the next year, as far as when they put a corn crop in, they were seeing some very interesting results as far as the soil nitrogen, both in the early spring and late spring. And as well as the corn grain yields they were seeing following this canola and clover double crop compared to their standard corn and soybean rotations. Just to briefly go over the systems that we studied and established in central Iowa in Boone County, just west of the campus of Iowa State University. We put into place the standard soybean corn two-year rotation, and then also added for comparison a spring canola underseeded with red clover, followed by corn rotation, as well as a wheat underseeded with red clover, and followed by corn rotation. So you can see in the images there the corn-soybean rotation, the canola with the red clover that then establishes, don't have a marker, after the canola is harvested off, as well as the wheat, then followed by the corn. Just to go over the first phase of the rotations, in 2010, the yields of the soybean, canola, wheat, and then the following red clover. The starred numbers there are estimates based on ISU extension as to what we can credit towards the system as far as nitrogen goes. For the corn the following year. We heard a little bit about that in the previous presentation, and these are estimates referring to soybean, the end credit that you would get from soybean, and then also the end credit you get from a pasture that can include either alfalfa or red clover or some kind of perennial legume like that. In the fall of 2010, in November, we injected liquid swine manure into either the soybean stubble there on the left or into the standing red clover. As you can see, those were pretty lush stands by, this is just before Thanksgiving last year. And we were applying to achieve a rate of 114 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. That's roughly 100 pounds of N per acre. And we were doing this. That seems kind of low given what you might expect being applied to corn ground, but we were doing this with the intention of seeing how much more we would need to apply the next spring, given a soil test, and how much this might differ depending on how much we need to side dress in the spring would differ between the three systems. So that may seem like a low nitrogen level, but that was because we wanted to do a split application and see how this might differ between the three systems. Taking a look at nitrogen throughout the growing season, or from fall of the previous year till spring of the next year, we could see that the soil nitrogen did not differ between the three systems. So those three lines, the blue line, the red line, and the green line, refer to the three different cropping systems studied, and the x-axis is the time that the soil nitrogen samples were taken. This was to a depth of 30 centimeters or 12 inches. The nitrogen test taken in October was before the manure was applied, and the nitrogen that was, or the soil test that was taken post-emergence, that's the late spring nitrate test that is very popular in Iowa. That determined that the amount of nitrogen that we had to put onto all the plots was the same. So we applied an additional 100 kilograms of N to those plots because we did not see any difference in the soil nitrogen between the systems that were preceded with the red clover or preceded with soybean. Now, that may seem a bit puzzling, but we have to know that this was a first-year established red clover stand and not a multiple-year alfalfa or red clover stand. So it may have been that a soil nitrogen bank, as some folks might like to refer to it, has not been built up yet. And this is definitely something that we will be investigating in the future to see how these systems might change with respect to soil nitrogen once these rotations and red clover has been in the system for a few more years. But at this time, point in time, after 1 year, I can't report any statistical differences as far as soil nitrogen goes. When looking to near end of season plant populations, the story doesn't differ too much as far as means go. So this is 1,000 plants per hectare. We see that there's no difference between the three systems. However, maybe the most interesting point about this is that the amount of variation between the three systems differs. And this is really important because in the two systems that were preceded with red clover, we were pretty much no-tilling into, I'll call it, dying red clover, that we were waiting to die after a chemical treatment. And so that really slowed corn development and maybe even emergence. But to see these data at the end of the year that those systems caught up as far as emergence and final plant population was really kind of appealing, at least in my opinion. And to see that the difference in variation between the three systems as far as the final end-of-season plant population is going to be very interesting to monitor throughout the rest of the year. And I will note that our target seeding rate was about 80,500 seeds per hectare, and in all of our treatments, we did exceed that population. So that was good that, you know, we met our target or even exceeded it. Finally, getting out of the estimated yields, I used the corn grain calculator made popular by the University of Illinois to come up with these figures. Once again, I can't report any difference between the grain yields. However, we see the same pattern as far as the plant population goes with respect to how much the variation differed. Again, in the wheat and clover treatment, the variation was the tightest, and in the soybean treatment, it was intermediate, and in the canola clover treatment, it was the greatest. So that'll be, again, something very interesting to monitor as time goes by. And just to put these yield data into perspective, the 2011 corn grain yield estimate put out by the USDA last week was said to be just under 11 megagrams per hectare. The same county that the experiment was conducted in, the county average for last year was 10.5 megagrams per hectare. And 2 years ago, it was around 11.6. So with these estimates, we're well above those, and estimates tend to be above what is actually out there. But it's also showing that, you know, we're not too far out of the ballpark. And again, we're using the same kind of calculations to compare systems. So really, that's the power of the estimation test. And that showed that there was really no difference between the three. Some other things that we are investigating with this experiment pertains to weed emergence and weed biomass. On the left is weed emergence, number of weeds, broadleaves, and grasses. This consists of mostly foxtails, amaranths like common water hemp, common lamb's quarters, and Pennsylvania smartweed. These were taken in June before a post-emergence herbicide was applied to all the plots. I will also remark that each of the corn plots, regardless of the system, were treated the same, both with harvest or planting date, planting rate, and as far as chemical weed control goes. So we see that we see some differences in weed emergence between the three systems. The two alternative ones had greater weed emergence early in the season. But what's interesting to note is on the right is the end of year, I'll call it end of year weed biomass. Those two systems resulted in the least amount of weeds being clipped from the corn plots. Now, I will maybe hypothesize that the chemical weed control, along with the residue mulch left over by the red clover, may have been synergistic, and it resulted in less final weed biomass in those plots compared to the conventional corn-soybean rotation. And that'll be definitely something that I'm curious about to continue to monitor as time goes by and these rotations go into the future. One final thing that we were interested in, and a lot of our farmers who were kind of collaborators in creating this project were interested in, were some of the additional benefits regarding soil cover that one can expect with these alternatives. In central Iowa, we receive about 52% of our precipitation between October 1st and May 31st of the next year. In the alternative rotations, we have a soil cover in place that can possibly protect from both wind or water erosion. And just to make this a little more clear, you can see on the left is October of 2010, that's soybean stubble compared to the lush red clover stand. And in April of the next year, again, is the soybean stubble waiting to be planted to corn. And the red clover that is just re-greening up and regrowing before we kill it and plant corn into it. So that shows that we do have some additional cover on the soil that may protect it and provide some agroecological benefits in that regard. So just to finish up and refer to the take-home messages once again, I can't really report any differences as far as the means go, considering soil nitrogen throughout the year, the final plant population, or the projected grain yield, but we did see differences in the variations with respect to those response variables, and those will be very interesting to see how those might change or not throughout the next few years. And finally, the notion of the soil nitrogen bank, which has been noted by a few other researchers in the past, might be something that changes as time goes by. And finally, some of the additional benefits that we are investigating, the weed suppression and soil cover, seem to be worth tracking into the future as far as being added benefits from the alternatives compared to the conventional. With that, I thank you for your time and attention, and I think I might have a little time or not.
Well, yeah,
okay, well, thank you.